question hung heavily in the air between the adults, turning the too sweet canned frosting to ashes in Margot's mouth. Unnerved and exhausted by the sailing trip with the archers, Margot pulled the truck to a stop in front of her cabin. The afternoon had been as delicate as a soap bubble, treading the line between respecting Maggie's memory and making the day a happy occasion for the girls. When they'd anchored the boat to Kyle's dock, an older couple had emerged from the back door, waving. Margot saw the exact moment when the couple spotted her, because their arms froze midair and sort of drooped to their sides. "Oh," Kyle said, his eyes cutting toward Margot.
"Mimi and Papa!"
June cried, waving her arms. Margot winced, both at the idea of meeting Kyle's in-laws and some of the strangest grandparent nicknames she'd ever heard. Kyle looked so uncomfortable he actually turned pale. Kyle murmured as Margot helped him tie off the line to the dock. "They're very nice people. It's going to be fine." Margot thought about how she would feel if her daughter had died an unfair and tragic death and she found that daughter's husband taking up with a stranger just a few years later. "That seems so unlikely," Margot told him. The Kellers did their best to keep pleasant, welcoming expressions on their faces as Margot and Kyle herded the girls up the dock. Vaguely, Margot remembered her Aunt Tootie mentioning Maggie's father by name. Hank? Henry? Hal? And Rosie. She distinctly remembered Tootie saying that Maggie's mother was named Rosie. June leaped at Hal, knocking him back on his heels and nearly sending them both careening into the lake. Margot gasped, expecting Kyle or Hal to reprimand her sharply for acting like that near the water. But Hal just laughed, while Rosie leaned in to blow raspberry kisses on Hazel's cheeks. Both girls chattered happily about their day on the water, the new ribbons they'd tied on the fairy trees, the cupcakes their daddy had made, burned, and remade. Margot approached the older couple with all the apprehension of an apprentice snake charmer. But Hal reached out and gave her a very firm handshake.
"Hi there, I'm Hal Keller. This here's my wife, Rosie."
"Margot Carey," she said, returning the handshake with the sort of pressure she'd used for meetings with CEOs back in Chicago. Rosie nodded and gave Margot her lighter, less squeezy handshake. "Tootie said you'd met the girls."
"She came sailing with us," Hazel said. "We took her to the fairy island."
Rosie's face took on a speculative expression.
"Did you now? And how'd you like it?"
"It was really lovely," Margot said carefully but firmly, staring into Rosie's frank brown eyes. "I feel very fortunate to have been invited to see it." Rosie pursed her lips for a long moment and then nodded.
"Good."
With a considerably lighter tone, Rosie grabbed both girls' hands and said,
"I brought a big pot of Brunswick stew and put it on the stove. I figured y'all would be hungry, being out on the water most of the day."
The girls cheered and ran up the steps to the house.
"Rosie's Brunswick stew is the stuff of local legend," Hal told Margot. "Your Aunt Tootie's been trying to get the recipe out of me for years," Rosie said. "And I'm going to take it to my grave, just 'cause I love to see the look on her face when she tries to figure out my secret ingredient."
"That seems fair," Margot agreed. "You're joining us for dinner, aren't you?" Rosie asked as the grown-ups walked toward the house. Margot glanced at Kyle, who said,
"Oh, no, she was just on her way home."
"I was," Margot assured them. "I shouldn't have taken the afternoon off. I have work to do."
"Margot is organizing the Founders Festival," Kyle said quickly. "That's why she came over this morning. She had festival paperwork."
"Mm-hmm,"
Rosie said, examining Margot closely. "Well, I better go," Margot said, practically bolting for the truck, even when June called after her. She couldn't keep doing this. Kyle had made the boundaries around his family clear, and she needed to respect them. No more dropping by with papers or news. If she had festival business to discuss, she would email him. It was time for her to start her exit strategy from Lake Sackett. Later, Margot was standing in the purpling shadows in front of her cabin, watching the wind play with the tree at the end of the cabin row. The wind had picked up considerably since they docked earlier, tossing the branches back and forth and smacking the roof of the dingy yellow and green cabin. She began walking toward it. Arlo, who seemed to think of her as his person ever since they'd conspired to trick an animal control officer, trotted along with her, sniffing her shoes. She wished she could say that the cabin tugged at her memory, but not one cell in her body recalled it. It was the first place she'd been taken from the hospital. She'd spent her first 3 years under the damaged green roof, but she didn't recognize it. Shouldn't she remember it? She stepped up on the creaky, sun-faded porch. Arlo seemed to realize that the old cabin was not a place for fluffy goofball dogs and slunk away with a pitiful whine. "Coward!" Margot called after his retreating furry butt. She reached under the empty flower pot nearest the door, knowing that, as with all the other cabins on the compound, she would find the spare key there. Taking a moment to steady herself, she turned the doorknob and flipped the light switch. The house hadn't been abandoned. The tables weren't dusty. The floors were swept. The kitchen counters were bare. It did look like some sort of museum exhibit to early 80s decor. A cheap imitation Laura Ashley couch and matching chair took up most of the living room, flanking an oak coffee table. Brass geese waddled across the mantel between framed photos. A reproduction Tiffany lamp glowed in the corner nearest the kitchenette. It was as if Stan had just walked out and never bothered moving the furniture. She recognized the people in the portraits as much younger versions of her mother and Stan. But it seemed so alien to see the two of them standing with their arms around each other. She stepped forward, spotting a framed photo of Stan with a baby on his lap. His whole body was oriented around that infant, as if he was trying to shield her from the whole world. A happy grin lit up his mustachioed face. She wondered for a second who that baby was, until she spotted the bib around her neck. It spelled out, Margot, in bright primary colors. Too late, she heard heavy boots on the porch. She turned to see Stan in the doorway, frowning at her.
I saw the light on.
He glanced down at the photo.
What are you doing in here?
To her surprise, he didn't sound upset. He sounded nervous, embarrassed, like this house was some secret he was keeping from her.
Tootie said that I used to live in this house with you and my mother, but I can't remember anything about it. I thought maybe if I looked around.
Stan carefully placed the photo back on the mantel, running his thumb along the silver-tone frame.
You were so little when your mama left, it's not a big surprise that you don't remember.
So why don't you stay here? It's a perfectly nice house. It has to be more comfortable than sleeping at the funeral home.
Stan stuffed his hands in his pockets, unable to meet her eyes.
I tried for a while. It was too hard, too quiet. For the first couple of years, I thought maybe if I waited, if I kept it how it was, your mama might come back and see that I waited on her. And then I thought maybe if I kept it the same, you would be more comfortable when you came back. Anyway, I just couldn't stay like that anymore, and I couldn't face changing it. Your Aunt Donna comes by and cleans every once in a while just to keep the critters at bay. Your room's down the hall if you want to take a look.
Margot glanced down the hall and found that, no, she had seen quite enough of the house for one evening.
No, I'm fine. Why wouldn't you just move the furniture? Change things up so it wouldn't remind you of us.
Stan jerked his shoulders.
It was easier just to leave it.
Why?
Because it was.
But why? Margot pressed. He turned, his expression tense.
Because if I changed it, it was like admitting that you weren't ever coming back, even when it was better that you didn't. I accepted that your mama didn't want me anymore, We weren't suited, as much as I hated to admit it. She wanted more from life than I could give her. I don't know why she ever took up with me. I was young and stupid, and I drank too much. Had nothing to offer her, other than maybe she thought I was going to get more of a share in the business than I'm entitled to. And she'd always had a hankering for city living. Fancy restaurants, the theater, that sort of thing. I thought we could make it work, but deep down I knew that she might leave. But knowing I would never see you again, that was too much. And I fell even deeper into the bottle because that's what I did then.
What? What do you mean it was better if we didn't come back? Why would you say that?
I didn't deserve you. I didn't deserve your mama, miserable as we made each other. I wasn't the type of man who got to go back to a nice house and daughter who loved him at the end of the day. I was a drunk, a sloppy one, lazy, distant, kind of a jackass sometimes. You want to know what made her leave? You got sick. Just a stupid stomach flu that almost any parents could handle, but I couldn't. So your mama was left to deal with it. And she got sick herself, and she just charged on because that's what she did. But then your fever spiked, and she needed someone to drive you to the clinic because she was in no shape herself. And I was too damn drunk to get behind the wheel, so she had to ask Bob. She couldn't even depend on me to drive you somewhere where she would end up doing all the parenting anyway. She had to ask my brother. And so I came home a few days later and found you gone. And I understood. That love you had for me when you were little, I would have let you down. You would have ended up hating me, and I don't think I could have lived with that. He put his hands on her shoulders and cupped her chin, forcing her to look up at him. At least this way, there was a chance that someday you might come back, and I might be cleaned up. Your mama did the right thing, Margot. She nodded.
She spent a lot of years frustrated with her mother, resentful of her mother. But now, she felt sorry for her mother, having to make that choice, to take a daughter away from the father who loved her, knowing that even if it was painful, it was for the best. Linda Carey hadn't been a nurturing, cuddly mother, but she'd made one loving gesture that counted, even if it left them all feeling destroyed. When she came out of the haze of her thoughts, she realized there were tears dripping down her cheeks. Stan dabbed at the water tracks with his thumbs.
Oh, sweet tea. It's all right.
I'm so sorry, she whispered, as he wrapped his long arms around her and pressed her into a shirt that smelled of Old Spice.
I did it to myself, he mumbled into her hair. It wasn't ever anything you did. I was a grade-A dipshit, and it took your mama leaving for me to see it. Hell, it still took a year or two for me to dry out. And even then, I couldn't get over the guilt.
Margot relaxed into him. She didn't think she could ever remember getting a hug like this from a relative. She wasn't being held at a careful distance to protect emotions and expensive clothes. She was being enveloped, anchored, and comforted. She could have had this for years if her mother hadn't left. Then again, who knew how long it would have lasted if Stan had continued to drink? There was no perfect outcome. There was no win-win. She probably would have ended up a mess no matter how her mother had handled it. I'm sorry, I have to go. Margot ripped herself out of her father's arms and dashed out of the cabin. Chapter 14. Margot felt like she was standing on a cliff with her toes hanging over the edge. The morning had started off normally enough. If normal was being caught between several different paths in life and feeling unable to choose any of them. Her father had been gently distant with her for days, bringing coffee to her office in the mornings and chatting, but not pushing her for anything more. Kyle had been texting her off and on all morning, checking in, making her smile. The last-minute details of the festival were coming together nicely. The early reservation numbers for local hotels looked good. The liability insurance on the carnival rides had come through. The online advertising was showing an encouraging number of click-throughs. Margo was going to host one last informational meeting with the volunteers running the booths and games, and then she would consider the success of the festival out of her hands. And then, Ray called for the interview they'd scheduled. Margo was on Skype, talking to a panel of people from RAB events as they asked interesting but pointed questions about her organizational methods, her thoughts on alcohol consumption, and her predictions on the coming trends in food and drink. It felt like Margo was stretching muscles she hadn't used in months, discussing her planning timelines and how she might develop good contacts in a city she'd never even visited. She relaxed into the conversation, but in the back of her head, she wondered whether this was what she really wanted, moving to Texas and abandoning the life she'd built. She'd agreed to the interview without a second thought. Did that say something? Wasn't your gut reaction supposed to be the right decision? While one of Ray's subordinates was asking a question about her stance on budget versus vision, a text notification chirped from her phone. Marianne had sent her another text. It was a picture that June had drawn in a school art class Marianne volunteered for. A rough shape, sort of similar to a sailboat, with four circular smiley faces sticking up over the hull. June's teacher had very helpfully printed names over the little faces. Daddy, Miss Margot, Hazel, and me. And at the bottom of the paper, June's teacher had printed, "My family went on a boat trip." And instead of the heart-melting sensation she was sure most people would feel upon seeing this message, a cold flush of dread ran through her belly. June had drawn her as part of her family. And then she realized that she hadn't answered the interviewer's question about party budgets yet. The rest of the interview had gone well. So well that Ray had offered her the job before they hung up. She'd sent Margo a compensation package that included a handsome salary, excellent insurance, moving coverage, and housing at a nice local hotel until Margo found an apartment. And Ray was kind enough to give her some time to think the offer over. So here she sat at her desk, staring at the wall, wondering what the hell she was going to do. On the one hand, she'd been offered an awesome job in an actual city. She would be using her real talents. She'd be making three times the money the family paid her to work for the funeral home. On the other hand, there was her family and her father. It was lovely that she felt like she had come to some closure about her issues with her mother. But how could she walk away from her dad when she'd just reestablished some understanding with him? And then there was Kyle. And his girls. She hated to admit it, but the idea of staying here and seeing where things might progress with Kyle scared her. She wasn't qualified for this sort of emotional responsibility. She wasn't prepared to be part of a nuclear family. She didn't have any experience remotely resembling a happy one. She had very limited mothering instincts. Hazel and June were adorable, but she was not ready for this. She might never be ready for this. They deserved better. She'd been deluding herself, having sailing outings with the girls, going to Kyle when she was upset, thinking she was keeping things casual between them. They'd been building toward something, and she was about to back out of it in a big way. They would be better off if she left now, before more expectations were built up, she told herself. She'd never intended to stay in Lake Sackett long term. She was only following the plans she'd always had. Did the wall make you angry? Margo turned to find Marianne standing in the doorway, with Frankie and Duffy peering over her shoulders. What? You're staring at that wall like it owes you money, Frankie said.
Lots of money, Duffy added. Bass boat money.
I've just got a lot on my mind, that's all. Well, I have a rare child-free evening, thank God for in-laws, and we came to see if you wanted to go down to the drive-in and watch cheesy 1950s B-movies while eating inadvisable amounts of popcorn, Marianne said. Carl's gonna bring the flatbed, so it will be like sitting on your own parade float. Oh, that sounds like fun, Margo said absently.
So what's on your mind?
Frankie skipped into the office and threw herself into the nearest chair. Margot sighed.
I'm thinking about moving to Texas.
What? Why?
Marianne cried.
We just got you back,
Frankie yelled. Duffy frowned and pointed to the ladies.
What they said?
I got a great offer from a really nice company. It's the kind of work I'm used to, the kind of work I'm good at, she said. And it would mean moving back to a city, somewhere I'm more comfortable. I love you all, I really do. I never thought I'd get to have a big extended family. And you gave me that. I don't belong here. And I need to go back where I belong.
Well, I can't say we aren't disappointed,
Marianne sighed.
And as a gesture of our enduring cousinly love, we're giving you the least scary of the paint-by-number Jesuses,
Frankie said brightly. Margot shook her head so vehemently she almost lost a hair clip.
No, thank you.
Have you told your daddy yet?
Marianne asked.
No,
Margot said, leaning back in her chair.
I don't know what to tell him. He just now opened up to me. But that can't be enough of a reason for me to keep living here.
Well, that's a bunch of horse shit,
Duffy grumbled. Margot snorted.
Thanks for your support, Duffy.
It is,
Duffy exclaimed.
You belong here. You're loved here. You don't need to run off to some city to find out that you're not as happy there as you were here.
Margot raised an eyebrow. Well, don't sugarcoat it for me.
You are happy, he insisted. I'm the one who picked you up from the airport, remember? I saw how wound up and miserable you were, checking your phone and the time every 2 minutes. And you're different now. You smile. You look people in the eye during conversations instead of staring at some screen. You should stay here. Where is she going?
Everyone in the room winced as Kyle appeared in the office doorway.
Kyle, hi,
Margot said, her voice cracking as she stood from her desk.
What are you doing here?
I may have called him to invite him to the drive-in with us,
Marianne said with her eyes closed.
I told him to meet us here.
Oh, thank you, Marianne.
Why is everybody acting so weird?
Kyle asked, his eyes narrowing.
We're just gonna go somewhere else,
Duffy said, hustling away and dragging his cousins with him. Kyle's head kept turning back and forth between Margot and her retreating relatives.
Margot? Are you all right?
I got a job offer,
she said carefully, at a really great company in Dallas. They're doing huge corporate events and these crazy extravagant private parties, right in my skills sweet spot. And they don't care about the flamingo disaster. They like my ability to handle myself in a crisis. Kyle's face went from warm and concerned to the neutral professional mask in seconds.
Oh. Well, that's great for you. I'm really excited for you.
Margot felt her shoulders sag with relief when he didn't start yelling. She gave an awkward little smile and said,
I am too. And I'm sort of used to southern quirkiness now, so really my time here was like a training camp.
Well, I'm glad that we could be of some use to you, he said coldly.
You know I didn't mean it like that.
How did you mean it?
He asked. Margot chewed her lip. There was really no good explanation for how she'd intended that statement.
So, I'm assuming you've already accepted the offer?
Kyle's face was starting to take on that cold, miserable expression it had held when she first saw him. She was hurting him all over again, just as she'd feared. She was as bad as her mother. It was best to do this quickly, to get it over with, so Kyle could move on and find some other woman who could make him and his girls happy. She dug her fingernails into her palms and tried to keep her voice as calm as possible, even while her stomach twisted itself inside out.
Not yet.
But Kyle, I always made it clear that I planned to move on from Lake Sackett, that this wasn't permanent for me. I told you from the start that I was looking for a job somewhere else.
But that was before you really knew me or the girls, And what about your family? You're always talking about how much you love spending time with Marianne, Frankie, and Duff, and Aunt Tootie.
Why are you throwing that away so easily?
I'm not throwing it away. I can still keep up with them over email and Skype and...
Oh, sure. That's exactly the same.
It's more than I had a year ago, Kyle. And it's not up to you to judge whether it's enough for me or not. Besides, you can't say you're upset about this. You've been pulling away from the moment Hazel found me in your room. I'm just finishing the job for you.
He dropped into the chair across from her desk.
You're right. I'm not being fair.
You know what? No. This is bullshit.
I don't want you to go somewhere else. You're the first woman who has come into my life since Maggie that I've even wanted to try a real relationship with. I know I've been an ass since that morning, but you've got to give me time to figure all this out. This is new for me, Margot. I can't say I'm madly in love with you just yet, but I was hoping that we were headed toward that. That we were headed toward some sort of life together. That you would want to stay here and make that life together with me and the girls.
I mean, you talked about bonus parents with Hazel. You don't think that they inferred some stuff from that?
I never meant to mislead you or the girls. I tried to be upfront with you about everything. Getting to know your daughters was great. But I never tried to give them the impression that I was going to join your family.
You talk about your wife, and it's this epic, tragic romance, the kind they write songs about. I don't know how to be that to someone. I don't know how to love like that. I don't even know how to be someone's dependable live-in girlfriend. That's not how I'm built. I wouldn't begin to know how to be someone's wife or mother. I literally had no good role models for that growing up. And I'm not about to use you or the girls as guinea pigs. I would only end up messing it up or leaving. It's better this way, before everyone gets all confused and enmeshed.
Oh, yeah. This is super easy. I don't feel hurt at all, Kyle scoffed, shoving up from the chair and moving toward the door.
I'm sorry, Kyle.
I'm sorry, too, Margot. I'm sorry I screwed up and hurt you. And I'm sorry that you're a coward. I'm sorry that you're a quitter. I'm sorry that I let you into my head. I'm sorry that I let you spend time with my girls when I've never let a woman do that before. I'm sorry that you're afraid. I'm sorry you don't trust me enough to even try to love me. I'm really, really sorry.
And with that, Kyle walked out of the office. Margot let out a breath she didn't realize she'd been holding and put her shaking hands on her desk. She was fine, she told herself sternly. She inhaled deeply through her nose, gritting her teeth, and blowing the breath carefully out of her nostrils. This thing with Kyle was bound to end sometime. She was fine. Really? Fine. Except that her heart seemed to be lodged in her throat, and she couldn't breathe. And Kyle's face had been twisted in such a horrible mix of disappointment and disgust. And she didn't want that to bother her, but she was pretty sure she wanted to throw up. And she couldn't make it up to him. Because there was no making up for making someone feel like they weren't worth the effort of staying around. Desperately, she wanted to go back to a few minutes ago, before she'd broken them. Broken something she hadn't even realized was important to her until she was faced with the terrifying reality of not having it anymore. She wouldn't go chasing after him. What would she even say? There was no coming back from this. No more teasing smiles out of Kyle. No more funny texts in the middle of the day. No more being held like she was something precious. No more feeling like, just once, she could be enough. Margot's shoulders sagged under the weight that seemed to be dragging through her chest. A faint knock sounded at her office door. Margot lifted her head to see Stan standing in the doorway, his brows furrowed.
You okay?
Margot nodded and tried to smile, but her facial muscles didn't seem to move the way she wanted them to.
Sure. Why do you ask?
Well, the Willett
Visitation is upstairs, in the chapel, right over your office, and your vents are open.
Margot looked up to see that the air vents over her desk were indeed open. And those vents led to air ducts shared with the chapel, meaning that everyone attending the Willett visitation had overheard her argument with Kyle.
I'm fine,
she said, even as her vision burned and tilted on its axis. Stan's mouth pulled back into a grimace.
I'm fine.
Sweetie, you don't have to pretend you're fine if you're not.
Stan crossed the room and closed the vents.
I'm fine,
she insisted, her voice wobbling.
Margot.
I'm fine,
she said again. She collapsed in on herself, curling around her stomach, laying her head against her desk. Stan patted her back awkwardly as she cried, huge, racking sobs that shook her whole body. She threw her arms around her head, trying to hide from her father or the world. She had no idea. She cried like she hadn't cried since she was a little girl. And when Stan put his arm around her shoulders, she didn't even have the strength to shrug him off. Chapter 15. The next few days were just as uncomfortable as Margot had suspected they would be. As word spread that she would be leaving town for a fancy city job, each of her family members, even Aunt Donna, stopped by her cabin to tell her how much they would miss her, but that they were glad she found a job that would make her happy. Except, of course, for Aunt Tootie, who informed Margot that she was a damned fool, but Tootie loved her anyway. Stan supported her quietly, giving her hugs when she needed them, and assuring her that they'd find a way to keep talking, even if she did move away. She spent a lot of nights on her couch, with Arlo cuddling against her chest, trying to remember why she'd returned RAB's call in the first place. Every time she dared appear in public, people stopped talking, and not just in the stranger among us way they had when she'd first arrived in town, but in a specific way that Margot had earned on her own. Kyle barely looked at her. Any additional materials for the festival she left in his office with Clarice, with instructions on how to get them back to her. It hurt. She missed him more than she thought possible. She missed the way he teased her, and the way her head fit under his chin. She missed the girls. She missed the way Hazel saw through the pretensions of adults and got to the heart of the matter. She missed June's weird humor and overwhelming enthusiasm for everything. And Kyle. Oh, how she missed every bit of Kyle. Even now, as he sat in the back of the crowded school auditorium, staring through her like she was a piece of glass, her chest ached with regret. But she was a professional. The blood of Tootie McCready flowed in her veins. Sort of. She could handle this. Margot cleared her throat and stepped up to the small microphone. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking the time to come out for this volunteer meeting. We've only got a week before the festival starts, and I think it's important for us to get everyone's roles assigned and clear so we don't get bogged down in last-minute details on opening day. Now, can we start with booth setup?
I don't see why you think we need this,
Sarah Lee complained loudly from the front row of seats. Jimmy Greenway sat to her right, his arms crossed over his LSES staff polo shirt.
There is such a thing as over-preparing, you know.
Jimmy smirked.
We've never had to have one of these special meetings before. Unless you don't think us small-town folks are smart enough to follow your instructions.
Margot's fingernails bit into her palms, the pain keeping her focused. Her expression was so much like Frankie's maniacal before 9 a.m. face. Marianne whispered, "Oh, shit," from the second row.
Is there something you would like to say, Sarah Lee? Only that there's really no reason for you to be here.
Sarah Lee stood up and shrugged innocently.
You've laid everything out so clearly. in small sentences so even we can understand it. Why don't you just let us handle our own from here? How about you go back to the funeral home and wait for your daddy to fall off the wagon? Or maybe I'm supposed to say, fall off the hearse?
If ever there was a moment in Margot's life when she heard a record scratch and all time seemed to stop, this was it. Her cheeks flushed hot, as every person in a 20-foot radius seemed to gasp and clutch their metaphorical pearls. Under normal circumstances, Margot would simply give Sara Lee a smile as warm as lake effect snow and make some stinging observation that would leave the woman wondering for hours. But not today. Sara Lee had just insulted Margot's father. Insulted him in a way that tarnished the sobriety he'd worked so hard for. And Margot found that she took that very, very personally. A smile so acidic that it burned her lips spread across Margot's face. Several parents stood up and backed away from that smile, clearly unsure of what was to come. Even Sara Lee looked a little unsteady, but she didn't move out of Margot's sights. Marianne only grinned and rubbed her hands together. Because Marianne still remembered what happened when she was ousted from the PTA leadership, and she sensed MacReady vengeance on the wind. "You think we should go back to your way of planning things?" Margot asked. Sara Lee nodded, looking to Jimmy for support. Jimmy merely stared at Margot, leaning back in his chair. "We didn't seem to have so many meetings and steps. I just got things done."
"Oh, I'm sure your small dictatorship over the PTA made it much easier to run.
I mean, your experience in the Ladies' Auxiliary certainly trained you for your time as president, didn't it?" Sara Lee cooed.
"It sure did."
"Is that where you learned to change the plans so often that no one knew how much you were spending? How much had been refunded from canceled vendors? Was that something you learned at the feet of Margene Moffat? Because I couldn't help but notice that you served as treasurer of the Ladies' Auxiliary while she was in charge. You know, all of those years when she was embezzling enough money to go to prison."
Sara Lee turned a shade of chalky white, found only in Kabuki theater, and then flushed bright purple.
"I don't know what you're talking about. You're just crazy big city trash. You see crime everywhere. You think everybody's out to get you. I hear drunks get real paranoid like that when they're on a bender."
"Oh, so I'm the drunk now and not my father?"
"Sure, I'm just being silly," she sighed.
"I mean, all those canceled checks from the festival account that I found from the last couple of years written out to cash? That could have gone toward anything. There's really no way of proving where that money went. Surely Mr. Greenway would have said something if he saw checks being written for prizes that were never bought and vendors that didn't exist."
Next to Sara Lee, Jimmy's eyes bugged out.
"Hey now, don't drag me into this."
"She's crazy," Sara Lee screeched. "Everybody sees that she's crazy, right?"
"You're right. My crazy allegations would be impossible to prove. Except that when I reconciled the books, there's about $12,000 missing that can't be accounted for through the receipts. And according to Sweet Johnny, you did just put in an in-ground pool, despite the fact that your husband's been out of work for a year."
For a second, Margot thought Sara Lee was going to punch her. The blonde stood there, clenching and unclenching her fist, while giving Margot a face-melting glare. And taking a page from Tootie's book, Margot said, "Sara Lee, honey, bless your heart." Sara Lee seethed, stomping within striking distance, her arms tensed. Behind her, Marianne stood up and stepped around the chairs, prepared to tag in if necessary. But Margot shoved her hand against Sara Lee's advancing shoulder and leaned in close enough that she could whisper,
"Don't ever talk about my daddy again, Sara Lee," she said, surprising herself with her own southern pronunciation, much less the use of daddy. "And don't go screwing around with my aunt or any other members of my family.
I know where the bodies are buried. And for once, I am not talking about grave sites. Sweet Johnny stood to her full 5 feet 4 inches and looked Sara Lee in the eye.
I think it's time for you to go, Sara Lee. I think we can get along just fine without your kind of help. But I'm going to be calling an emergency meeting of the PTA on Monday. You should probably be there, ready to answer some questions.
Sara Lee sniffed, trying her hardest to look dismissive, but she seemed rattled and pale.
I don't know what she's talking about, and I won't stand here and be accused of something I didn't do.
With her nose in the air, she swanned out of the auditorium. The screech of tires from the parking lot followed. Jimmy stood up and quickly, silently made for the fire exit. Kyle's face was alight with barely contained schadenfreude. So barely contained that he held his meeting agenda in front of his face to keep people from seeing it. A cacophony of chatter filled the auditorium as Marianne and Sweet Johnny rushed to Margot's side.
"Did Sara Lee really steal from the PTA?"
Sweet Johnny asked. Margot nodded. "It took me a while to unjumble the books and figure it out. I'm not an accountant. I'm just compulsive about receipts."
"Why didn't you say anything?"
"I already turned it all over to the sheriff's department," Margot said. "They've hired a forensic accountant to go through and track the money and determine whether Principal Greenway was involved. I wanted to wait until after the festival before I accused her and caused even more complications."
"But instead you chose now?"
"Well, the accountant texted me this morning to say that he'd confirmed everything I found, so the investigation is progressing now no matter what," Margot said. "Besides, she took a jab at my dad. She had it coming."
"We expected the MacReady to come out of you at some point," Marianne said. "We just expected it to involve booze and farm equipment."
"Farm equipment?" Margot asked, glancing over her shoulder to Kyle's seat. The sight of the empty chair brought a frown to her face. Marianne nodded solemnly.
"It would be the last thing we'd see coming."
For the first time since Margot arrived in Lake Sackett, a cool breeze drifted through town. October had finally fought back the humidity and heat to create some semblance of reasonable weather. That wind carried the smell of smoked meat and frying dough, making Margot's mouth water. Opening day for the Founders Festival dawned bright and cool, with cupcakes gently wrangled out of Bud Sr. before his retirement. Main Street looked downright Rockwellian, with each building coated in new paint and the signs refreshed. Every stationary object was festooned with patriotic bunting and informational posters. The Ask Me Anything volunteers had already started to man their posts. The food vendors had arrived hours before dawn to start their prep work. The smell of Holy Smokes pork shoulders was enough to make a vegan beg for mercy. Aunt Leslie had opened a tiny house version of the snack shack, with Bob and Marianne running the counter. She was offering some of her newer recipes, trying to determine which would be best to take to the state fair. Margot had no idea how you deep-fried s'mores, but she was eager to see how it turned out. She promised herself a big plate of them if she survived this first day with dignity, or at least without punching Sara Lee in the cleavage. Margot had her clipboard. She had her walkie-talkie. She also had butterflies moving like unmanned drones through her belly. She rubbed at her stomach. She realized that for the first time ever, she was worried about how an event would turn out, not because her job or some bonus was at stake, but because she would be personally disappointed if it didn't go well. She wanted to see her neighbors having a good time. She wanted to see the town make some money and get some interest from potential tourists. And if that didn't happen, she would be very put out.
"It's gonna be just fine."
Margot turned to see her father standing behind her, with his hands in his pockets. His bright green MacReady Family Funeral Home and Bait Shop t-shirt was a cheerful contrast to the somewhat sheepish discomfort on his face.
"Hi," she exclaimed. "You look great."
"I feel like an idiot,"
Stan grumbled, pulling at his collar.
"Well, I for one am happy to see you out of your usual black and white ensemble. Next thing you know, I'll get you into pastels."
"Don't push it,"
he told her,
while she grinned. Across the street, the carousel played a tinny version of Let Me Call You Sweetheart. Margot hoped that the operator switched it up a bit during the day, because that song was going to drive her nuts. She made a mental note to check the operator's maintenance records one more time before the official kickoff, because Tootie's talk of untrustworthy carny folk was making her nervous.
"This all looks real nice, honey,"
Stan said, his tone careful.
"I think this whole thing is going to turn out just right. Everybody's real proud of how you pitched in. I'm proud of how you pitched in. You worked hard, and it shows. I like to think you got the bullheaded work ethic from me, but Lord knows your mama had plenty of that, too."
"She did," Margot conceded. "But I believe I got some of my better traits from you."
"Aw, thank you."
"Mostly the bullheadedness," she added.
"Smartass,"
Stan grumbled. "I got that from you, too," she told him.
"That you did."
He sighed, slapping his MacReady's ball cap on his head. He slowly leaned over and pecked her cheek.
"I'm gonna go help EJJ on the corner of Beecham Street."
"Make sure he drinks plenty of water and gets some time off his feet," she said, returning his cheek bus. "I know he's tough as nails, but Tootie will worry. And that goes for you, too. Hydrate."
"The bossiness is not a MacReady trait," he called over his shoulder.
"Yes, it is." Over the course of the morning, Main Street grew crowded with people. The mayor's official cutting of the burlap ribbon to open the festivities was met with thunderous applause. The band Shell's constant rotation of bluegrass and country acts kept the atmosphere lively. The candy shop's Win Your Weight in Fudge contest had cleaned out their supply in less than an hour. The boats and hay rides kept up a steady traffic, and Margot had to refill the brochure stand twice. Aunt Donna and Fred Dodge had stopped arguing long enough to try to beat each other at spraying water into a bear's mouth for prizes. All around her, children clamored for sweets and toys. Adults were laughing and stuffing their faces. If there was any better sign of a successful venture, she didn't know it. She would miss this, she realized. Lake Sackett wasn't exactly home, but it felt far less alien than it had when she rolled into town all those weeks ago. She would miss the slower pace, and the view from her porch, and being able to go to a restaurant and be fussed over by Ike for not eating enough. She would miss Arlo.
"So, everything turned out just as you said it would."
Margot turned to find Kyle standing behind her. His hands were shoved in his pockets, and he looked almost as awkward and miserable as Margot felt. That only made her day a little bit better. "How are things going over at the school?" she asked.
"Fine. We've done 2 skits and a choir concert without incident. The kids and their parents have been very well behaved.
And Jimmy Greenway is losing his mind. He's so upset that he had nothing to do with it.
Thank you."
"You're welcome," she said, her lips quirking up into a hesitant smile. "I hope this display of power helps with your perceived authority."
"I know it sounds sad, but it just might," he said.
Silence hung heavy between them, a little island of unhappiness in a swirling ocean of squeals and excitement. She couldn't tell him she would stay for him. She couldn't bear to hear him tell her that her apologies weren't enough, or that he was still disappointed in her. She couldn't send him away because she didn't know when she might have the chance to talk to him again. And he wasn't making this any easier by filling in the blank space with words.
"So, how are the hotel numbers?" he asked. "Are they good?"
Margot was wrong. Maybe she should end this conversation. It was getting painful.
"Margot!"
Margot startled as Juniper bounded up to her, her little round face painted with an elaborate butterfly design, the glittering wings stretched from cheekbone to cheekbone.
"I got my face painted!"
"You did," Margot said, catching June before she managed to bowl her over. Her voice rang with false cheer, but her smile was sincere, as she took in June's elaborate face decor. "And it's absolutely gorgeous.
You look like a rainbow and a unicorn made a baby on your face."
Kyle blanched and shook his head, as Hazel scoped out the prizes at a nearby ring-toss booth.
I'm still working on my child-friendly patter, okay? Margot whispered.
It was a little weird,
June told her. Hazel inched closer, catching Margot's eye. And what about you, Hazel? Are you a wolf? A cat?
I'm a fox,
Hazel whispered. Ah, sneaky and mysterious, without being so gauche as to wear a mask like raccoons. I like it. Hazel grinned at her.
So no rainbows and unicorns?
Can we go back to when you were shy and didn't tease me? Hazel giggled. Good call on the face painting lady, Margot told Kyle. She's not cheap, but her line is wrapped around the funnel cake stand.
If I've learned anything from our trips to the zoo, it's that you should never underestimate children's overwhelming desire to have glitter paint slapped on their faces, he said.
And by the way, all of the local hotels are booked solid for the next 3 days. We're running at near maximum capacity on just about everything. We're estimating a crowd in the 10,000 range. So I'm going to consider this a success.
That's a huge increase over last year.
Kyle raised his hands in triumph and yelled,
Suck it, Jimmy Greenway!
Several people turned around to stare at Kyle's display. He shooed them away.
As you were, people, move along.
Congratulations, Margot said, smiling as she handed June over to Kyle's waiting arms.
I better get going, she continued. I'm sure there's an emergency involving the petting zoo or porta-potties that I should be dealing with.
Kyle frowned.
That sounds smelly,
Hazel supplied.
I'm sure it will be, Margot said.
I'll see you around. Margot turned away from him and took a deep breath.
See? You got through it just fine, Margot. Just fine.
She had to find a new word to define herself or she was going to go insane. That evening, Stan found a sunburned, tired Margot on the porch of his old cabin, sweeping the dead leaves aside with Tootie's push broom.
Tootie said you wanted to talk to me? Is it about the festival?
Margot grinned at him and swept the last of the leaves off the porch. We're never going to get those years back, and trying to pretend otherwise is hurtful for both of us. But we can build something new. With a flourish, Margot opened the door to show him what she'd been working on in secret ever since their conversation at the mantle. With Duffy's help, she'd gotten rid of the faded floral couch and the tacky oak table. She'd replaced them with comfortable, more current pieces from a liquidation sale at a furniture store outside Atlanta. She'd also replaced the dishes and glasses, the coffee maker, the bed linens and dish towels. She'd stocked the fridge and pantry with heart-healthy foods. And she'd framed photos from her teen years, her college graduation, and a few candid shots with her cousins, and left them around the living room. I'd like you to stay here, she said, close to your family. You shouldn't be living your life at a funeral home. That's a place for the dead, not for living.
This is really nice, he said, nodding. This is beautiful. Thank you.
I like to think I took away some of the bad memories that kept you from staying here before and replaced them with new ones.
She nodded toward the mantle, where her childhood photos were spread. Also the carpet, because that was outdated and infested with mold.
Thank you, sweet tea,
he said, putting his arm around her shoulders.
I was getting kind of tired of sleeping at the funeral home.
I can't imagine why, Margot said, eyes wide.
Stan dropped to sit on the new nubby brown couch and put his Coke on one of the Trout of the World coasters Margot had purchased.
I'm not actually decided one way or the other whether I'm going. I thought it would be easy to make that decision once I finally got an offer, but I can't seem to make myself pick up the phone and call Ray.
The big decisions are never easy, he told her. And I think you know it's about more than a job or money or big city living.
What would you think of me moving to Texas?
Well, I can't say I like the idea. I'd miss you. But we could call and write, and I could get Tootie to show me how to use that webcam thing. It wouldn't be like having you live here, but it's more than we had before.
That's what I told Kyle. And he got so angry with me.
And you can't figure out why?
Margot crossed her arms.
No, I know why. He wants more from me than I think I can give him. And he's mad at me for being too scared to try.
Why would you be scared? Kyle seems like a nice boy. Good job, smart, likes kids.
I thought you were supposed to be discouraging me from being interested in boys.
I'm still figuring out this whole dad thing,
he said, elbowing her lightly in the ribs.
Come on. Why are you scared?
I'm scared because I like him too much to hurt him. Because I don't even know how to begin to give someone the kind of love he would require of me. And rightly so, because he deserves it. I'm afraid of confusing his girls or hurting them. I'm fundamentally unable to have a committed relationship involving grown-up feelings.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
The last guy I dated, I dumped him before dessert on the third date because I was afraid he was going to take up too much of my weekend time during the holiday party season.
Okay, then.
He pursed his lips, trying to contain his laughter.
Look, I'm clearly not the expert on romance.
Clearly.
But it strikes me that you're not a coward. You didn't back down from coming here to a strange place full of people you didn't know. You didn't back down from your Aunt Donna, and she scares everybody. You didn't back down from Sarah Lee Bolton and her harpies when they tried to assassinate your character over a stupid party.
Watch it.
My point is that you don't back down when you're faced with something scary. So why would you back down when you're faced with something that could make you happy?
Margot's nose scrunched up, and she buried her face in her hands.
I wish that didn't sound so profound.
Stay or don't stay. I want you to do what's going to make you happy. But I don't want you to make a decision based on what you think should make you happy. There's nothing wrong with being happy living in a small town. There's nothing wrong with being happy working for your family. Your mama thought living in a big city would make her happy because she thought it would be embarrassing to be content with a small town. But from what you tell me, she wasn't all that happy no matter where she was.
Again, please stop making excellent points that force me to reconsider my worldview, she said, sagging back against the couch.
Sweetie, what do you want to do with your life?
I want to stay, she exclaimed. Her eyes went wide. I want to stay. I really do. I didn't expect that, but I do. Not because of Kyle, though that would be nice. But I don't want to leave because I have friends here and family. And a job that doesn't send me into a panic if I get something wrong. And people I actually look forward to seeing every day as opposed to people who would love to see me fall on my face so they could post it on Facebook. I like living here. I don't want to leave. Oh my God, I don't want to leave. Dad, I don't.
So you're going to stay?
Yes. Stan grinned.
Well, don't tell your Aunt Leslie.
Why?
She'll activate the gossip phone tree. Your fellow will know your decision quicker than a jackrabbit on a date.
Ew.
So you want to order a pizza? Mama Ruby's is doing a triple bacon special this week.
How about that veggie lasagna Aunt Leslie sent over? Margot asked, pointing to the kitchen, where the lasagna was warming in the oven. I would really like to know that you had some vegetables with your dinner. Or at all today.
Is this how it's going to be from now on, you bossing me around and fussing over me?
Probably, she said, nodding.
I guess that will be all right.
She gave him a lazy smile. Thank you.
You called me Dad back there. Did you notice?
I did. I can't say it's a habit I'll get into, but I'll try.
Well, that would be all right, too, he said, carefully keeping his face still, though the corners of his mouth were quivering into a smile.
Your enthusiasm is overwhelming. Stop, I'm blushing.
Come here, he said.
He put his arm around her shoulders. She leaned against him and found that she was comfortable. And for the first time in her memory, she propped her head against his shoulder and closed her eyes. It took Margot more than a week to work up the nerve to call Ray and admit she wasn't taking the job. It wasn't a terribly professional or emotionally mature response, but